Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You know, next year the YWCA in Columbus will celebrate, I think, 125 years in existence. A lot has changed for the women and minority communities that the Y is committed to serving since then, and the Y seems to be in a constant state of change to achieve its goals. The latest change, longtime area volunteer and director of community affairs for Huntington Bankshares, Alfie DiBella, in December was named to succeed Cindy Lazarus to head the Columbus YWCA as president and CEO. 5 years ago, Cindy was named to succeed Karen Schwartzwalder. Today, we have all three in the studio to talk about the past, present, and future of the YWCA in Columbus. Appointed to the job in 1986, Karen Schwartzwalder resigned her position to head the regional YWCA in 2003. She also served on the Columbus Public Schools Board of Education. The YWCA, we haven't exactly nailed it down, but I say it grew about sixfold, maybe, you know, give or take. Karen recently retired from her regional position and will begin serving on the national YWCA board soon, and will continue as a volunteer. No surprise there. Cindy Lazarus is a former Columbus City. Oh, Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Ann.
Remind me to welcome you to the show. Cindy Lazarus is a former Columbus City Council president, Franklin County Court of Appeals judge, and since 2005 has led the Y Family Center, the city's first 24-hour emergency shelter for homeless families, was established during her watch. Cindy, thanks for being with us today.
It's great to be with you, Ann.
And finally, last but not least, Alfie DiBella started the job on January 19th. She's a senior vice president and director of community affairs and president of the Huntington Foundation. She headed up the campaign to build the family center, has served on the community shelter board, the steering committee of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, and more. Alfie, we're glad to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, I probably should say it right now, the disclaimer that there is no way I have time in one meager show to itemize the achievements of the three women sitting in front of me right now, so I'm not even going to try. But anybody who would like to call in and join the conversation is welcome to, because the accolades have always been many and frequent for all three of them. Give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Karen, I met you, gosh, it was probably about, I don't know, maybe 9 years ago, 10 years ago, when I was writing an article about women's clubs and how women's clubs were formed originally to serve societal needs, to because, you know, that's the only way they could do it was through clubs, all things being equal, if you want to call them clubs. And you were very steeped in the history of the Y. What is it about the Y that has helped sustain it through all these years and really kept it as vital as it ever was?
How long do we have?
I know. In 50 words or less.
For one thing, I think the foundation of the YWCA, its basic mission, has always been the same. It's had, I would say, its vision may have altered slightly. For the first 100 years or so, nearly 100 years, it was very much the vision and the mission were pretty much the same, and that was really to spread the Christian gospel. You know, the YWCA started before the Civil War, so we're talking about a time period that was very oriented towards spreading the Christian gospel throughout the world, and that's what started the YWCA. But at the same time, throughout that period, the YWCA, it was, of course, a women's organization, and in order to spread the gospel the most effectively, they needed strong women with leadership skills. So it started training women to do something that they all believed in. That has evolved, you know, considerably. The YWCA has changed a great deal since it first started, but it's still always about women's leadership and women's leadership for a good and appropriate and important cause in the country. And we can talk later about how its mission has altered over the years.
Yeah, it started out as a refuge for young women who first moved to the city.
That would be the case only with the large city YWCAs.
Okay.
Most of the YWCAs in the beginning, for the first probably 75 years or so, were started on university campuses, and they were campus associations of young women who felt a great deal of zeal about spreading the gospel and building leadership skills to do that. And the big city, larger city YWCAs have always had a different purpose, and that is also to help young women. And that's what we know most about today, because that's probably the sustaining vision that we've had over the years. It's the large city focus on helping women who the boards of those organizations felt it was their job to help younger women, women who needed assistance in order to develop the skills to live independently and successfully in a Christian environment for a long time. That was also
how did you get involved in it?
I came by it very naturally. My grandmother was on the board of
you
this
started
YWCA.
Swimming in the pool.
I started as a young girl. I was a very active Y teen. I was probably a leader in my high school and my teens. But I actually was recruited by a neighbor, to tell you the truth, and hadn't thought of myself as an executive director of the YWCA. But the more I knew about it, the more I absolutely loved the mission, which is eliminating racism, empowering women. And I thought to myself how I would be fortunate to have a job that allowed me to do that every day.
You know, I have to say, until I moved to Columbus, I really didn't know what a Y was all about, because my experience, the extent of my experience, was, you know, getting pushed into the pool, and that was about it. And, you know, going there once in a while for that purpose and that purpose only. Cindy, how did you get hooked into the Y?
When I moved to Columbus, which was in 1980, after I, you know, settled for a while, you began, as you heard about things in the community, if it involved women at all, it always seemed to be tied to the YWCA here. And so from afar, I looked at this organization, and I used to say it was like the first string of, you know, the Super Bowl team. I mean, every woman that you heard of, knew about, read about, was involved in the work of the YWCA. And over time, I was fortunate enough to be invited to participate in some of the activities. And I think Columbus is singularly blessed to have this rich history of women reaching out and helping other women and being so intentional about it. We did a video a couple of years ago for our Women of Achievement event and interviewed Karen, and she talked about, you know, when you're in our building, which, as you know, is a historic structure, when you're in the building at night when it's quiet and as you walk through the halls, if you really pause, you can hear the whispers of the women who've been there before you, and you really do have that sense of being part of this march, this ocean of women who join together and through joining together really have effective enormous change in our own lives, in the lives of other girls and women, and in the lives of our community.
It really does sort of it reaches out to a lot of different parts of the community. And Alpha, you're a really good example of that, because so do you. You know, right. Just like everybody usually involved at the upper echelon, they're involved in a lot of different things. How did you kind of focus? I mean, you do a lot of volunteer work. Why commit yourself professionally to the Y?
Well, the YWCA has such an amazing organization and has such a broad range and really provides a lot of critical services that are so needed in our community. So as a funder in my previous work, I was well aware of the wonderful work being done by the YWCA, you know, anywhere from the family center to it provides, you know, the front gate to our homeless families in this community, and it's a national model to the residents who live in the Griswold building, 102 low to moderate income women, not to mention the after school programs. So the broad range in looking at the racial justice dialogues that are being taken, being presented at the Y in leadership programs, it just became very apparent that this would be a wonderful opportunity for me to really have more impact on what I was already doing, but making a difference in touching more lives. The Y provides so many critically important services to our community and touches so many lives. So it was just a natural decision for me to be part of this.
You know, in next hour, I'm going to be interviewing Drew Weston. He's the author of The Political Brain, The Role of Emotion in Deciding the Fate of the Nation. And one thing he talks about is how we like to refer to racism euphemistically these days. We don't like to be direct about it. And yet, you still have that in your mission, clearly, to eliminate racism. It didn't go away when Barack Obama was elected president, in other
right.
words. How does it manifest itself now?
You know, as Alfie mentioned, we have this series of programs that we offer, racial justice programs that help people to recognize the presence, the continuing presence and continuing destructive impact of racism in our society. And in an effort to be really proactive about that, in all of the work that we do at the YWCA, whether it's hiring or volunteer committees or, you know, panels that are going to be presenting in one of our programs, we try and keep uppermost in our mind the desire to benefit from the richness of the full community. And it's so easy for any of us to get caught up in our own small circle and to only see the other members of the circle. And there are huge resources of diversity within our community, but we have to be intentional. We have to be proactive about making that a part of every single thing that we do, and that has become the work of the YWCA in addition to specific programming like the Racial Justice Dialogues.
You addressed the issue of trying to break out of our own small little groups when you had a big group of focus groups one time. I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago. You gathered a bunch of people together and you put them, you wanted to talk about the vision and the future of the why. What do you get out of something like that when you do that? What do you hear from people?
It's always fascinating because, as I said, you know, we tend to get, there's like cow paths in our brains that you just kind of, you know, like walk the same place time after time. And you get people of different ages and different stages in their lives. And suddenly you realize that you have really stopped hearing the voice of stay-at-home mothers with young children. You've stopped hearing the voices of middle school age girls who are just undone by what society does to them at that age in their life. And so it is this great reawakening of the possibilities of what we need to address and what we can address when we work together.
One thing is it seems to address all aspects of society. I mean, when you talk about eliminating racism and empowering women, that pretty much covers the waterfront when it comes to social justice issues because eliminating racism is everywhere. What, Elfie, do you bring to it at this point in the process when it comes to what do you carry on and what would you like to see different?
Oh, absolutely. Great question. Thank you. Looking at what has been established over the past years and the wonderful work that has been done by Cindy and Karen and wonderful staff who's passionate, we have to continue to break down barriers. There are so many ways to look and find opportunities to change the way we look at people, the way we are inclusive. So I look forward to building on that platform, but to embrace the values of empowering women and eliminating racism by providing more programs. Some of them could be focused on, we provide programs from, you know, cradle to grave. Mm-hmm. Let's focus on some of the programs for some of the older women. Let's look at financial literacy. It's so important for all women of all ages, all walks of life. They need to have that empowerment. So whether they're anywhere in the community or whether they leave our family center or our residence program, they need to know the, you know, they need to be empowered to have that happen and have that knowledge. And I think we continue to broaden our services that we already provide, such as our after-school program. This is a wonderful way to empower our working mothers who need the peace of mind to know that there's quality programs out there, highly affordable, but also tremendous, you know, wonderful programs that are provided to their children. Looking to, you know, serve more women, to be broader. Also have an insight and listen to, as, you know, Cindy just mentioned, we love to listen to the various voices in the community to find out what is needed and how can we be the conduit to make change, to help make change, to make even more of an impact and a difference in this community. There's so many ways to partner with other community organizations, other funders, but also to look at other organizations, women-oriented organizations, and see how we can partner and complement each other on, you know, creating, making a difference in this community.
We're going to have to take a short break. My guests, Elfie DiBella, YWCA CEO and President, also two former CEOs and Presidents, Cynthia Lazarus and Karen Schwartzwalder. We'll be right back. If you'd like to join us, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher at WOSU 820 NPR News.
Get the stories behind the headlines every day on All Things Considered.
The primary goal of the federal stimulus program is to encourage job creation. Little was hesitant to say if the federal money they've used so far created any jobs. He preferred the word preservation.
The potential was there that if these folks didn't have this work, they would not have work for their employees.
On your drive home, listen to award-winning coverage from the WOSU News Team on WOSU 89.7 FM.
You're listening to All Signs with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. 31 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today, a high of 35 this afternoon. Clouds tonight with a slight chance of snow and a low of 22.
Support for WOSU comes from Thrifty Airport Valet Parking, a valet service for business and leisure travelers that takes you in your car to curbside check-in at Port Columbus, 614-237-5800 or thriftycolumbus.com.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the YWCA in Columbus. And I have with me two former CEOs and presidents. I got to be specific.
Two unemployed CEOs.
Once you're a CEO and a president, aren't you always a CEO? I mean, don't you always feel this super strong connection to the organization?
Absolutely. And I'm speaking here.
You're the newbie. Huh?
Exactly. Once you're with the Y, you're always with the Y.
Yeah. I call it a life sentence.
The gift that keeps on giving was Yvette's characterization.
Yvette McGee Brown. Now, Cindy, this is not like the super high paying job, you know, and all that.
No, it's not.
And you worked almost, Karen too, and Elfie, you will if you're not already, almost it's like a 24-hour a day job. You're juggling a million balls in the air. I mean, how do you even get, you know, corralled into such a, how do they convince you to do it in the first place?
They send Cindy out your way, and nobody can say no to Cindy.
And they send Karen my way.
It is.
I had lunch with Karen. I had, you know, started talking with people about the possibility. I was pretty sure I didn't want to do it. I had lunch with Karen, and Karen, I remember, said to me, you know, Cindy, your job description every day is to get up and work on eliminating racism and empowering women. Who wouldn't want that job? And it was such a great question. You know, it is hands down the most challenging work I've ever been involved in, and also the most exhilarating work I've ever been involved in. But you certainly do not do it for the money, and you do not do it for the lifestyle, because it is consuming work when done well, I think.
It's all consuming, and you have no idea. I think the community doesn't really understand that. I think that a CEO of a nonprofit organization often has this experience, particularly in a YWCA or any other organization that has a 24-hour-a-day operation. You are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You almost have to go out of the country to get any relief. And your main challenge, I think, is to get good people in positions who will stay there and who will help you at all times create that vision that's always out there.
Karen, what was the big – you were with the YWCA in Columbus for 13 years? 17 years. What was the big turning point for you? Where was that point where you started the job? It was different than the way you left it. You changed it.
When was the turning point?
Yeah.
When did I feel that?
The first day you walked into the office, or was it after a year or two? Or,
you know,
these are good questions, Ann. I should have asked this during my lunch with Karen.
If you only know.
That's okay. Right. Yeah. It was YWCA has been in Columbus for 125 years, and it has had its ups and downs. And the period of the late 60s and 70s were tough for any kind of institution, not just nonprofit organizations like the YWCA, but colleges, universities, sororities, fraternities. I mean, you can name lots of them. And it had had kind of a downtime where it was trying to figure out what's its new role in this latter half of the 20th century. And I came on the heels of that. It had really deteriorated to a bad spot by about 1980. It was about to be actually about to lose its United Way funding, and the building was about to be condemned. Fortunately, there had been an executive director for about 6 years before I came who got a lot of those very basic things under control with help from Battelle, for example, and just began to establish the YWCA on a new course. When I came in, I jump in, anybody.
When I came in,
when I came in, I remember taking a tour with the person who was the maintenance manager for the building downtown, which is our really only site, our only permanent site. And he said, took me through the building. He said, "These boilers are not going to last for another season." So that was about March. And that was my first thing, was to try to find money someplace where I could get the boilers replaced. I mean, those are fundamentals. It's hard to be thinking about mission and vision when you're shoring up the basics of the building that houses you. No chance. Our position in the community at that time, there was no chance really to do much capital fundraising in the community, because I think people doubted whether or not we were going to survive. The real turning point for us, and this is what I learned from it, the Women of Achievement Luncheon. We really concentrated on the Women of Achievement Luncheon. It's an event.
When did that start?
It started in 1986. Okay. I was introduced at the first luncheon as the new executive director.
25 years ago this year.
That would be it, yeah. That's ancient I am. And
ageless.
Ageless, yeah, of a certain age. So the Women of Achievement Luncheon gave us a chance to do several things. One, raise money, and money that wasn't tied to anything that could help us do more things. And we increasingly made more money from it. But that wasn't as important as the public relations aspect of it. That's our mission, women's leadership. And it let us put it out in front of people in the community so that they could see it in action. And the program got better and better year after year after year, and it has continued to get better in terms of presenting the mission to the community and letting people share in support of that mission and vision. And finally, it allowed us to do something once a year where we were excellent. And that was so critically important, because people, if that's the only way that they touch base with you, that's what they know about you, that you do this one program really excellently, and probably then, therefore, you do everything excellently. That was a big learning step for me, and so that's why we put so much time and energy into that project.
I think the first one I went to was, it might have been when Dagmar Celeste was made a Woman of Achievement. Mm-hmm. And I think Governor Celeste spoke at that one. It might have been 1989. I can't remember. But I think that's why I went to it, because I was tagging along with him. I was a State House reporter, and I was tagging along with the governor. And I didn't even know what it was about. I hadn't really heard of it before, but it was back in the building. It wasn't the big extravaganza. I mean, it's incredible now. It grew like that under you.
We continually outgrew our setting. And fortunately, they built the convention center. So, and we thought that the regular ballroom there would be fine for us. But ultimately, we have to go in the car showroom is the venue for it now.
But you know, part of that goes to the partnerships that Karen developed as well. So, in the mid '90s, early '90s, the Columbus Dispatch and Limited Brands, and a couple of years after that, Honda came on as returning, continuing sponsors, and they brought to that event not only stable dollars, which are critically important, but infused the preparation of the event, the planning of the event, and the execution of the event with talent and resources and expertise that they had in-house that we still don't have in-house. I mean, if I had Elfie stop and think for a moment how she's going to put this show on in another 2 months in front of 2,000 leaders of the Columbus business community with no one on staff who has that as their single point of focus, nor, you know, kind of the resources to do that, she will stop sleeping between now and April the 7th.
Who says I've been sleeping?
Stop even more. But it is, as Karen says, it has become such an important piece of the work of the YWCA, because you're doing multiple things there. You are holding up these women as examples to other women, which is so important and so inspiring. You have to see it to believe it about yourself. We are telling the business community about the work of the Y and the institution of the Y. And we are demonstrating year in and year out that women can not only do this, but we can do it better than anybody else in town year in and year out. And so that is a heavy weight and an incredible opportunity for us. And it grew out of Karen's recognition, and I think this is true, really, you know, kind of guided by some of those sponsors to say this can be more than just kind of we getting together and saying, "Ann, you're great, and we'd like to recognize your work."
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That we got, I would say that we were guided by certain business leaders completely who had experience to have that broader vision, and they were the ones that said to me, "You know, this gives the business community, this gives everyone in the community the chance to stand behind women's leadership and demonstrate how important it is." And I think just that statement on an annual basis has done wonders for women's leadership in this community, frankly.
Things have changed over time. Things have gotten better. You see more women on boards of directors and that sort of thing. But back in the early 80s, that wasn't the case. I mean, it's changed dramatically since then. And so there wasn't that natural – there weren't those natural venues to show women as leaders, except in a lot of social service type ways.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's true.
So when you do Women of Achievement, what does that say to you? I mean, they don't come just from – they aren't volunteers necessarily with the why. Necessarily.
The women that we recognize?
Right.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, they're leaders within the community as a whole, and they are nominated by a vast number of different individuals. So, and that's what makes Women of Achievement so exciting and powerful, because it is not just Y generated. It is the community who lifts up these natural leaders. And many of them are unsung heroes. They just do so much, and then all of a sudden you're reading these testimonies and stories, and you're going, wow, how can this woman exist? And we haven't heard of her, not that we haven't heard of her, mm-hmm. but we haven't acknowledged her. And I think, you know, you went to the luncheons. I think everybody walks away empowered and inspired. And it's not just, you know, the obvious, you know, women, but it's just somebody like you and me. You know, anybody can go beyond, above and beyond.
And I think, you know, it is a recognition of not just professional accomplishment. We don't necessarily recognize, you know, the foremost concert pianist or brain surgeon in town because of their professional expertise. It's what are they doing with their lives to shape and lead and support others. And so it is. That's the kind of breadth of life that we look to hold up and recognize.
If you're just joining us, my guest, Elfie DiBella, she's the YWCA CEO and president. Also, Cindy Lazarus, a former CEO and president, most recent former. And because I have to say that because my third guest is Karen Schwartzwalder, former CEO and president of YWCA. So we have, you know, kind of covering the gamut the last 30 years of the Y pretty much are sitting in front of me. And if you would like to join the conversation, give me a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. 5 years ago, the Family Center was built. Now, Elfie, you were part of that planning process. Cindy, you sort of launched it. What was that like? Because it was a groundbreaking event.
Yeah, actually, most of the heavy lifting had been done before I joined the Y.
So that would be then.
It was. Well, Karen started it.
We started it. We actually had a Family Center for a long time, but clearly needed a new one. And this was a national model. We lead when it comes to this model.
So we had this group of dedicated community people and board members who said there's a better way to take care of homeless families than we're currently doing. And we were led in that in part by the Community Shelter Board, which, you know, always has a broader vision. And the YWCA led the campaign to raise $7 million and to build this facility that was unparalleled any place in the country. And we have so many lessons that came out of it that we didn't anticipate. We didn't necessarily anticipate that we would open to do business in this brand new program with everybody watching, because it is dependent upon volunteers being there every single day to be a part of that work. And so every single day as we were trying to learn on the job, we had people watching as we made mistakes or didn't get something right. But that became then part of a very aggressive learning process that we needed people to help us see where we could do better. better and how we could do things differently. And now it has become kind of laboratory for learning how we do things in this community in the same way that wonderful resources like the Community Shelter Board or I Know I Can have been.
When you have something like the Family Center, though, it creates a knowledge base of what the community needs like no other, really.
Yes.
It's just reaching down into the core. So how do you know how to plan for something like that in the first place?
Well, I think people, you know, did their very best. And as I said, I think the Community Shelter Board was a huge asset in that regard. They looked at the program that we had, which was so limited, better than anything that the community had had before, but so limited. And so as you look at the physical facility, you'll see lots of reactions to things that were inadequate in the old facility. And within 2 years' time, we realized lessons that we would have done the building differently if we had had the chance to do so. And thanks to the generous support of Nationwide Foundation, we had a chance to do so. So they came in and gave us a grant to re-engineer some of that space within the first 2 years that we were in operation. Has made a huge difference in our ability to more adequately serve families because of the learning that we had and their willingness to support us with continued funding to make that possible.
Elfie, tell us about the center. It's a 24-hour emergency shelter for homeless families.
Yes, indeed. It is the front door for our community. Anybody who finds themselves homeless or in need of housing can go there, and then they can stay there. We have 50. We can accommodate up to 50 families. And then our staff actually works with the families to make sure that all their needs are met, you know, whether they need insurance services or Medicaid, you name it. They help them get a job. The children continue to go to school. The young children are cared for by the safety program with the daycare and provide an after-school program. And what is so amazing to notice is that our staff is actually able to work with these families, and about almost 70% of the families are placed within 21 days, that's 3 weeks, into permanent housing. So that's an amazing track record. And it is what helps us give us that national model status. And we actually have organizations from all over the United States come to Columbus to visit our family center to learn about this model. And Cindy is so right by pointing a lot of the accolades to the Community Shelter Board, who does such a wonderful way of helping shelter providers in this community. But it's also part of the Rebuilding Lives updated strategy, which is the way we address the issue of homelessness in this community. So, yes, it's definitely amazing.
One of the critical pieces to it, Anne, is that it is a part of a system of services. And, again, this is comes through us through the guidance of the Community Shelter Board, but this program would fill up and shut down if it were the only service available for families. And so the staff at the Family Center work in concert with staff from Salvation Army, Friends of the Homeless, Homeless Families Foundation, Volunteers of America, and prevention programs that are now in place as well, so that there is developing this tapestry of services that have helped us to reduce the incidence of family homelessness within Central Ohio and reduce the cost of service for serving homeless families in Ohio. And that's important because nobody wants to see a family in the stage where they have to come into a shelter. But we can only do that working in partnership with others and throughout that system, volunteers from every congregation, every business, every neighborhood in Central Ohio saying, I can make a difference. I can be a part of this, and I want to do that.
We have to take another quick break, and then we'll return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
I listen to NPR every day. It gives us insight into why people do what they do and have a passion for it. We hear from people in their words, and it's not the reporters telling us what this and that person said, whether it's about the economy in the United States or the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm Bethany Donnell, and WOSU is my source for in-depth reporting in a soundbite age.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour 2 of All Sides will be here. We'll hear about the political brain, how our brains respond to different kinds of political messages, and to what extent we are influenced by subconscious racial bias. That discussion begins at 11 o'clock right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. And then stay with us this afternoon at noon for Fresh Air with a discussion of the Conservative Political Action Conference as well as the National Tea Party Convention. That discussion on Fresh Air at noon right here on WOSU. 31 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies this afternoon and a high of 35 degrees. Clouds tonight with a slight chance of snow and a low of 22 degrees. For Wednesday, cloudy skies with snow showers likely. We could see about a half an inch of accumulation and then a high of 35 Wednesday afternoon. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the YWCA in Columbus, and joining me for the conversation is a former CEO and president of the YWCA, Karen Swartzwalder. Also, Cindy Lazarus, the latest former CEO and president of the YWCA. I'm trying to think of different ways to do this. And the current CEO and president of the YWCA, the new, brand new one, Elfie DiBella. Thanks again for joining me today. You know, Karen, when you took over, we talked about how the Y about that time, it sort of hit a low in terms of public awareness about what the mission was and the fact that maybe it had lost its mission for a time. And a lot of that was seems to be at that time there were a lot of women's organizations that had membership falling off. It just didn't seem like the same sort of – women didn't do the same sort of things to coalesce as they used to. It wasn't a club thing. It was just showing up on, you know, I don't know, on campus or something. It just wasn't the same sort of emphasis. How did you turn that around? Because it's definitely something that Cindy and Elfie has been sustained since then.
And I think improved. But, you know, part of the problem is you do something well for 100 years and you think you're going to be doing that for the next 100 years and suddenly the world changed. So context is so important and so relevant for a YWCA. And you could talk for a long time just about that subject and trying to sort through exactly what I want to pull out on that. One of them is you lose your relevance to the next generation. And that's kind of what happened to us. There were many women's movements during that time. Women were very active.
Different.
But they were, yes. And other things were coming along, like the YWCA is the leader in the world for the provision of services for to assist with domestic violence. But in this community, the YWCA didn't do that. Other organizations had to fill that goal. And there were other organizations forming while the YWCA kind of sorted itself out. The world has continued to change. And I think what finally happened with our YWCA, and it's happening to a greater extent now, is that more people became involved with the YWCA, and therefore it became more relevant to larger groups of people. Cindy has built on that, and I hope she'll talk about this. One, she certainly engages young people, and two, she certainly engages the tool of young people, which is internet-based relationships.
Right. Cindy, Young Leaders Start Here is one of them, shaping the future for – I mean, there's just the Gen Y.
Right.
How do you – in other words, if you got to tap into that on a formal basis, you have to say, no, part of our mission is to continue to tap into the younger generation and continue to figure out what they need and want.
You know, when I started at the Y as the CEO, I had no doubt that it would speak to women of my generation. I wasn't sure that it would speak to young women in their 20s and teens, even, you know, early 30s. And what I discovered was that there was still a hunger among women to do things together, that whether they thought of it in terms of an association like the YWCA or an organization, whatever, that there is something that we need and find in working with each other, that kind of affirmation about who we are and that our lives have value and that was as strong with these young women as it is with us. And the Gen Y program came out of a lunch that I had with a group of young women lawyers who I had gone to speak to a group and looked around the room and realized I didn't know these women. I thought, how did that happen? And so I said, you know, come have lunch with me. And we were sitting around talking, and one of them said, you know, have you ever thought about having a junior board? And as far as I knew, we hadn't, but thought it was a good idea.
Jacobson's did it.
You know, like, that's right. That's right. Where, what was I thinking?
I'm dating myself there.
So, I mean, I think the social networking that Karen spoke about, you know, people my daughter's age and younger and older communicate differently than you and I do. And so, you know, to continue to just kind of flood out there with our attempt to connect using our vehicles of communication was never going to work. And so what we discovered was, you know, there was still attraction, you know, passionate, ardent attraction to the work. We just needed to be able to communicate it in a way that was comfortable and attractive to them.
Social networking has become a big part of that.
Absolutely. Huge part of it. Within 6 months' time, I would say the demographic of women who were interacting with us dropped 20 years. 6 months' time.
That is unbelievable. And from a national YWCA perspective, that's cutting edge. Others, I don't know any organization that has achieved that. It may be there, but I just don't know about it. And I'm pretty aware of what's going on in the rest of the country.
But that goes back to the commitment we talked about before. Diversity also includes age. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at our committees, you know, we have been purposeful about saying we want you to be involved and we don't want you to be involved, you know, like cutting the ribbons for the table setting. So we've had young women who have chaired programming committees who are in line to, you know, chair events that have been part of this whole communication and messaging in a very impactful way. And so it has been very synergistic for them and for us.
I just wanted to take an email from one of our listeners today. That's a two-part question. We'll go with today first. How do you ensure that you have qualified social workers, addiction counselors, et cetera, on duty on site 24/7, 365 for the single women who need those services at your downtown building? How do you account to the public for how you use taxpayer dollars? That's kind of a more than a one-part question, but how do you provide the services you provide, I guess?
We do a lot of contracting of services with other organizations for expertise. And so the alcohol addiction, for instance, we work with Amethyst, which is a fabulous program here in Central Ohio for the women who live in our building downtown who have addiction problems. We have partnerships at the Family Center with a variety of different health providers, including children's hospitals. So we do not attempt to, you know, kind of do and be everything for everyone. Elfie and the board just adopted a budget. And we are audited every year by more auditing groups than you can imagine. So the shelter board does an audit. You know, Department of Development does an audit. We have the regular financial external audit so that the assurance of taxpayers' dollars being used appropriately is really ingrained into the operation that ELFI oversees.
What's the budget now, ELFI?
It's about $6.7 million.
And how has that grown, Karen? Do you remember back in the day?
when I started, it was 1986. Uh-huh. It was definitely less than $1 million, and we were spending more than we were bringing in, so that made it even worse. I don't know how that computes to today's dollars, but it was considerably less.
Let's take that next part. Given the aging baby boomers, I don't know what they're talking about now.
Ageless.
The ageless baby boomers, you mean, yes. At least 50% of whom are women. And the particularly devastating blow to their savings, pensions, and job prospects in this economy, what are you doing to help them survive and move on? Now, Elfie, you were talking about that earlier about
financial literacy.
Financial literacy. Yeah. Big issue these days in tandem with foreclosure and
exactly.
Our 401ks and so forth.
I think it's of utmost importance. And I know a lot of the financial institutions in this community are really actively looking for opportunities to teach financial literacy. But financial literacy comes in all shapes and forms because of depending on what age group you're in. If you're starting out, you might need different services or information than when you're in a retirement age. So absolutely focusing on financial literacy at every gamut of the age life is very important and something we will definitely focus on. And we already have some financial literacy components that we're currently teaching and providing.
We also continue to look at partnership programming, as Elfie mentioned, so that as part of the planning process, the focus groups that you talked about, Anne, this need for services that address women who are aging, you know, across every dimension of their lives has come up. And our idea is not to go out and, you know, kind of try and own that institutionally ourselves, but to say who else is kind of involved in this, and how can we work together to put on some programming in locations that work, at the time of day that works, and in a matter of presentation that works in an accessible way for that group.
Yeah, we're the convener for those opportunities.
Kieran, how does all this stack up nationally, since you happen to have that vantage point? You first were in charge of the regional, and now you're going to be on the board of the national. How does Columbus stack up?
Columbus is a leader in every respect. If I as a part of the region, we did a lot of training. We did the training in different online capacities for training. If I could have had Cindy on every week, I would have. I mean, I think what is happening, this YWCA, is so valid in terms of the mission. It is so focused on the engagement of a broad range of people and so successful at it. And we haven't said anything about the YWCA board here in Columbus, mm-hmm. but we've had a history of YWCA boards that comprise extraordinary women with a real understanding of what their leadership role is, down to the nitty-gritty when it's necessary. So I would have, and I did get her on occasionally, but not nearly as often as I. She had other things to do, of course.
You know, the idea of leadership, we were talking about a little bit about it when we were talking about the Gen Y and, I guess, Bright Futures, another program. It's not something that happens naturally. It's something that really is learned. There are natural leaders out there, but even then, it's a skill thing. And so you're starting out, you mentioned, Cindy, that some of these girls are started out as working on committees. And
right.
maybe eventually the idea is to make them all leading, being the chairman of the board or the chairwoman of the board or however you want to put it. How do you decide, for instance, who gets to participate in these programs? Because there has to be a lot of competition for it.
Most of them involve nomination processes. And, we are looking for not necessarily the people who are kind of already highly developed in their skill set that may not have as much of a need for the kind of opportunities that we're going to make available. Talking about even our board members, they come to us as highly skilled, highly successful professional women. And yet the skills of being a board member and having that level of responsibility for leadership of an organization like the YWCA is frequently not one that they've had at that point. And one of our former board chairs, Donna James, who is one of the most accomplished women I know in Central Ohio, said she learned to be a leader on the Y board. And so when we did the board retreat this past summer, one of the points of additional focus of the strategic plan was on governance, because we think that the role of governance in this institution has such unlimited potential, not only for the board members, but for the institution itself and so many other parts of our community, that we think by focusing on that, having real deliberate attention on that, that we will kind of hit warp speed with the YWCA.
So how has that changed? The board and its participation.
I think the new boards of the world need to be engaged, be able to speak and know the mission just as well as we do sitting here in front of you.
Sometimes when you talk about boards of nonprofits, it's like sort of something that they put on their resume, and you feel like, well, they don't really show up.
Right. Yeah, those days are long gone. We are looking for women to serve on our board that have a passion for the mission and have the wherewithal to give us that knowledge that we may be lacking. We can't be an expert on anything and everything, but we have these women who are leaders in their own right and bring a lot of expertise of varying kinds to the table. So it's a wonderful opportunity for us to once again broaden and expand our horizon with this amazing talent that our board members present, but also have the opportunity for our staff or the clients we serve to learn from them. Our board, I mean, Karen is absolutely right. It is such an engaged board, and the women, it's an elite class, and I mean that as a compliment, because it means something to serve on that board, because the women are so talented and very given. And any woman who serves on our board does not just serve on the board; they serve on committees. They're involved with our Woman of Achievement event, with our Woman to Woman. It's above and beyond, and we couldn't do our work without their impactful help, as well as, of course, our staff.
you know, Christy Angel is the chair of the governing board, mm-hmm. Out of the board retreat, one of the things that was decided was that there is a task force of the board members that are looking at what is it that we can do to really move forward on this issue of governance. And so they're looking at everything from what's the structure of the board meeting, what's the frequency of the board meeting, what skills do we need to make available for board members so that it is the most meaningful service that they will have in their life. And by and large, people are not thinking about that. They're still thinking about the questions that you asked, Dan. How do we get them to show up? You know, our entry level is you need to be an organ donor. That's the level of commitment that we're looking for. And then we take you
from
there.
We have a darn good reason why you can't. There are reasons out there why you can't do it. You know, I just wanted to kind of wrap up. We have about 3 minutes. And I did want to talk about the building a little bit because I was lucky enough to be on a tour of the building a few years ago with former U.S. Rep. Deborah Price. It was regarding how the Y had spent some money that it had received in an earmark from Congress. Big stinks about earmarks and that sort of thing these days. And I think I wrote a column about that.
But the building
we have just a couple minutes left, but the building really is amazing. And you mentioned one of your first orders of business, Karen, when you took over in 1986 was to get some new boilers. But now tell us a little bit about the building. We just have about a minute left. You want to? Who likes to talk about the building?
We all do.
Because it's very cool. And you said it's not the building itself, it's the people who are in it, but.
Yeah, the building is amazing. And one of the first things I did on my very first day was to get a tour from the very top to the bottom of the building. And yes, the coolers are still there. But, you know, there was my high heels on top of the roof checking it out. But it's amazing. And it's really what is so special about that place is you have the upper four floors where the 102 women live and the community that exists there. Then, of course, you have our administrative place and you have our, you know, fundraising area and all those things. But then we also have the health and fitness area in the basement. And so that's a wonderful opportunity for everybody working downtown to work out and have that amazing swimming pool that everybody has such wonderful memories of. And then, of course, we have the Huntington Banquet Ballroom that is a great resource for individuals wanting to have celebrate a wedding there. It was very affordable, and we have other rental rooms. So it's just an amalgamation of mm-hmm. all these different rooms and opportunities to have a building of such a historic presence, and it's just a lot of fun.
It's the only building in downtown Columbus that was built by a group of an organization of women.
Mm-hmm. That's all the time we have. That's a great way to end it. Thank you for being with me, Karen Swartzwalder, Cindy Lazarus, and Elfie DeBella. Appreciate it. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.